Hi, this is Sam, and welcome to the Faith Center Podcast Network. We want to be a source of hope, joy, and encouragement on your drive to work, your time at home, or anywhere in between. Be sure to like and subscribe to get all of your daily and weekly content. For more information about Faith Center and the podcast network, please visit lg4square.com. That's LG, the number four, square.com. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, you can email the show at podcast@lg4square.com. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Barnabas Project. We are in Revelation today in our podcast series, and today we are in Revelation 13.5.
13 and a half. Second half.
Last week we discussed the
previously on Revelation,
we discussed the first beast that rises out of the sea. And this week we will talk about the second beast that rises out of the earth. So I will finish off Revelation 13 for us, and then we will continue to discuss the second beast. This is the one that we would call the false prophet. Chapter 13, verse 11. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all of the authority of the first beast in its presence, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, and even making fire come down from the heaven to the earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lives. It was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. It also causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark that is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This is a call for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, or 666.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the second beast today, the false prophet, and how we talked last week briefly about this false prophet being a member of this false Trinitarian order. Mm-hmm. So we see that right now there's three beasts mentioned in Revelation. There's the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. So there's Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet. Mm-hmm. Again, a three-way mockery of God's Trinity is presented right here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you haven't heard anything about the Bible,
yeah,
you've heard chapter 13, verse 18.
Seriously.
And I feel like most people who want to study Revelation, this is it. This is your week. You've been waiting for this the whole entire time.
Yeah.
But before we get there, there's a lot to understand about the false prophet.
Yeah. Well, before you get there, it's funny. I was actually reading a commentary on this while I was studying for this, and I got about three quarters of the way through the study before the guy said, "I'm not a Christian. I was just studying this." And he full on posted this thing online about his study on the false prophet, and he wasn't even Christian. And I'm like, what?
Interesting.
But sort of goes with what you're saying. Everybody knows that this section of scripture exists.
And, you know, a lot of people, Mark Hunt, that's a weird way to say it. Sounds like somebody's name, Mark Hunt. But, you know, they're looking for the mark in all kinds of things.
Oh, a Mark Hunt.
A Mark Hunt. You know, like.
Oh, I hear it now. You first said that. Oh, like, who's okay. Mark Hunt?
Exactly. But they're looking for the mark, like the vaccine. Okay. You know, it's December 24th, 2020. The vaccine's on a lot of people's minds.
It's the current mark.
It's, you know, everybody's like, it's the mark. Well, we're not saying it is. We're not saying it isn't. It seems highly unlikely that it is not the mark.
Highly likely that it is not.
It's not the mark.
It's not the mark.
That's what we're trying to say.
Gotcha.
And for a lot of reasons. And the biggest one to me is that the false prophet initiates the mark. It actually isn't initiated from the Antichrist.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about the Antichrist. Yeah. It's the Antichrist name.
We see that the false prophet is the one that is enforcing this.
He's an enforcer.
He's kind of a turd, but he also is trying to get people to worship the Antichrist. That's his job. That's why we call him the false prophet. He's pointing people to this worship of the false Christ.
So just like in the godly Trinity, the Holy Spirit points people to Christ.
Yep.
And that's what this is. Satan's mocking. That's what he's trying to recreate. I wanted to really point out as we go through this that it's in the presence of the Antichrist he does this stuff.
Mm.
And, you know, it really doesn't seem like, because of how Scripture so perfectly points it out, that he has power outside of the presence of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
So I think that's worth mentioning. But the first thing that really stands out is where he comes from. You know, all of the other beasts, when we got into Daniel last week, and listener, we're probably not going to get into Daniel much this week, so you can maybe, you know, rest a little calmer on that one this week.
We'll point back to it, though.
Probably. All of those beasts come out of the sea, mm-hmm. Which to the Jewish people was like the Sea of People, so it was like not them, essentially, but it was the rest of the world, it was the rest of people groups.
Yeah, exactly. They would come from the boats, things mm-hmm. like there's that concept also. There was also, I read somewhere where somebody was kind of relating this coming out of the sea as coming out of chaos.
Yeah.
And so like the sea would, you know, toil and mm-hmm. and cause, you know, waves and destruction and things like that. And we know that in this time that the beast shows up, there is a lot of chaos
right.
that he's coming from and then sort of rising to be the answer.
Right.
And we'll get more into that, but that is the idea. The Antichrist and the false prophet will be presenting themselves as the solution.
Mm-hmm. And in Revelation chapter 17, and we read this last week where it talks about the woman who sits on the beast with seven heads, and it says the beast with seven heads, so we know that that's the Antichrist mm-hmm. and not the dragon, because it doesn't say dragon, although it does say a scarlet beast. You know what? We're probably diving down a whole different road that we'll just save for 17. Regardless,
yeah.
That beast, the woman, sits on many waters. And it actually tells you that that many waters is many peoples of different tribes, tongues, and language and groups. Mm. So, yes, there is this idea here of the sea being chaos, but it also being kind of the chaos of people. Like, mm-hmm. it's people chaos.
Yeah.
And so I like that. I think that works really well because this beast comes out of the earth, something stable, something grounded, something, you know, that we're very familiar with. The Jewish people were kind of known to be afraid of the sea. It wasn't their favorite thing.
Yeah.
And in fact, in the days of Solomon, this was kind of cool. They had a navy. They had a naval force in the days of Solomon, but they did not man it with their own people. They essentially hired the people of Tyre to be their sailors for their navy.
Okay.
They didn't do it themselves. I thought that was interesting. You know, Daniel's vision of these beasts rising up out of the peoples is highly related to government.
Mm.
This idea of a beast rising from the earth, many commentators will liken to religion. So you've got a government organization controlling people, and you've got some form of a religious organization controlling people. Mm. Whether that's a world religion we know today, like Catholicism, mm-hmm. or even Islam.
Yeah.
Because there's some really interesting commentaries out there how it could be Islam.
Sure.
But then you also have an idea of it could just be like a generic one world religion, like Unitarian, you know, like a, what am I trying to think of here? But, you know, a one world type of thing, like all roads lead to God sort of a religion.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what that is, this character, as you started off this podcast talking about, is referred to as the false prophet. Well, you kind of need a religion for a prophet.
You do.
To prophesy for and in favor of. So regardless of what the religion is, this is going to be the leader of it. He does not have crowns. I think that's worth mentioning. He has horns. So there's some form of a kingdom, in the, at least in the sense like he might have an established base where his religion comes out of.
Sure.
But he's not a king. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't rule people that way.
Well, and this is where the historicist belief system of eschatology would jump in and say, well, then we're talking about the Pope here.
Right.
And, you know,
very classic
historical. Yep.
Viewpoint of who this beast is, uh-huh. is some Pope figure from the Catholic Church.
Yeah. They would point really us to Rome as the seven beast.
Heads. Yeah,
exactly.
Because Rome does have Rome sits on seven hills, and you know, geographically, there's a really strong argument to be made about that connection to that, which you'd really find in Revelation 17,
yeah,
pretty heavily.
And again, so now I'll point us to the preterist belief here, is that they would say, of course, that Nero is the Antichrist, but the false prophet would be the person that are persuading people to worship Nero. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, let's go back to, you know, the Roman beliefs at the time. They would say that Caesar was a god in the empirical cult. Mm-hmm. Like the Roman empirical cult, they put deity on Caesar. So Nero was that deity that was to be worshipped. And this false prophet would come along and enforce that. And so there's an interesting thing in this chapter. Let me pull it back up here, where it talks about the image of the beast, and it might speak, and where's that verse at? And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak, and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. That section right there is really kind of fascinating historically. And again, I want to point people historically and futuristically on all of this, so that they can kind of explore all this stuff for themselves. I look at a lot of this stuff and see things that have been and things that will be also. So this is what has happened. Historically, this image, they would set up the image of him, of the Caesar, in the place of worship in Jerusalem. And what happened was they made this statue big enough for people to climb into. So they would open it up, and then the prophet would get in there, and he would start speaking through the face of this statue of this image of the beast. He would speak through the image of the beast and actually try and deceive them into believing that the deity of this beast was present in the idol that was set up there inside the place of worship. So they would just pretend, they would, you know, cause deception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to that point too, where that's the classical historical way to look at things.
That's the preterist, which is in line with the historical view as well.
There are some good books out there by people who do talk about the similarities of Islam.
And, sure.
Oh yeah. And this as well. And specifically like Mecca, rather than it being Rome, being Mecca. And so it's well worth looking into. And it may be a tie of the two. It could be the two horns mentioned, like some sort of a bridge between Catholicism and Islam, because those are really, truly the two most dominant religions that are out there. Worldwide, not America. Maybe America these days, I don't know. And so maybe that's a bridge, like maybe the horns are a bridge of two major religions coming together with similarities, because there are similarities when you talk about like seven hills. I was trying to look it up and see if I could find a better way of describing it, but like Mecca essentially has seven formations around it that could provide some idea into that. Thinking like Rome being on seven hills. Mm-hmm. But it's well worth doing your research into and diving down that road to see what way or both ways that you would like to go. But like I said, I really don't want to undersell that it could be something new too.
Yeah.
Which is definitely not in the preterist line of things.
Most definitely not.
It's all done. It's all past. It's all old. But I would like to, you know, say, hey, keep that in mind too. It could be just some bridge of a new way of thinking, like all roads lead to God, kind of very one worldy kind of nature. Or it could be a highly science-based way of thinking, like a religion that's almost just science.
Yeah.
Which I could see really rising up.
And I think when John wrote this, he would have looked at science as some kind of a religion.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have looked at the things that we know today. So if Jesus was showing John this stuff that we're seeing today, he would have called it magic.
Right.
He would have called it like great signs and wonders, mm-hmm. but we just call it science today.
And I think like, you know, just even the idea of science becoming so much more accepted. It's very accepted, obviously, in our school systems and things like that. But where we came from as life, you know, you have your traditional evolutionary point of view, which is really becoming refuted, even among scientists today. They see the flaws in evolution.
Yeah.
And so they want something else. And so there are scientists who are kind of branching off. They don't want to go to God. That's not okay. It's illogical to think that there's a God, but they might accept a view that says aliens planted life here.
Yeah.
And that's okay for them.
Or string theory is becoming really popular.
Right.
There's also this quantum mechanics of the mm-hmm. universe that's becoming really popular. Multiple dimensions of our reality.
Right. Multiverse.
The multiverse. A lot of people are pushing that, scientifically speaking, and actually calling it fact.
Right.
And instead of, you know, biblical truth, they're pointing elsewhere.
Right. And I feel like we see more and more of this in our entertainment mm-hmm. today. You know,
really
like
subtle stuff too.
I love, you know, in Pastor Cam, we have many awesome conversations on the Marvel franchise and Star Wars. And don't get me wrong, I love all those movies.
Not speaking against them.
But they do tend to promote that way of thinking, like a scientific alien-based planting of Earth's people, kind of a creation stories.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can see that bleeding into our culture.
There's actually a really big push for that right now. This may sound like big conspiracy theory coming from the podcast here in the LeGrand Faith Center, but this is actual mainstream stuff. Like Ancient Aliens, that's the show mm-hmm. that everybody's going to for their religion these days. And this is on the History Channel.
Right.
Ancient Aliens. And that is their...
Yeah.
That is their doctrine. They are presenting that aliens have seeded this planet.
Yep.
And we all come from aliens. We are a massive experiment and they're keeping an eye on us until the day that we are ready to introduce ourselves into the Galactic Federation. Like this is actually mainstream stuff.
It actually is. And I know that you said Galactic Federation.
I know.
Probably just
that was intentional.
But there are literally stories on mainstream news right now about how aliens have visited Earth and they're just waiting. And, you know, we're part of a galactic federation, but the world won't know about it.
Yeah.
Why are we getting so crazy today on this podcast? Well, it's because we want to bring this alternative idea along with the very traditional ideas, along with the preterist ideas, along with all these things, because
we really went from a historical context of things that have been, and then now we're up in space.
Right,
we're in the atmosphere, people.
We really jumped, but the reason, one of the big things to me, why I think it's well worth bringing that thought process up, is because he performs signs and wonders in the presence of this other beast. And they're obviously pretty substantial signs and wonders mm-hmm. because people marvel at them. I think it would be hard to do a sign in this present day and age and have people believe it.
Yeah.
So I think there's got to be an element to his being and what he does that's got to be unbelievable mm-hmm. so that people believe it.
Hey, and we're not saying that we believe the Antichrist is alien. What we're saying is that if aliens landed tomorrow,
right,
and everybody's like, oh, they're real. We were seeded by aliens. Deception. Right.
Just like last week when we read 2 Thessalonians, a strong delusion will come upon people.
And we're not even saying that aliens are going to land and that we believe that.
Right.
What we're saying is that this whole narrative right now that is mainstream, this is a mainstream narrative. This narrative about aliens seeding our planet is already the beginning of a false narrative.
And you could see really quickly how it could become a religion.
Yeah.
if, and this is that new aspect of it, I think that, you know, could be. Now, does this really fit the idea of it coming up out of the earth? Not so much, but it's, well, it's worth mentioning that there could be something new and different on the horizon that could really rock people's way of thinking. And are you prepared? Do you have the biblical answers in place that would help you to refute that?
It makes sense of it.
If something like that came up.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where we're coming at with this. Because in all honesty, doesn't this guy sound just a little supernatural? Like, and I know that that's probably a just a really dumb way to say it. But maybe superhuman is another way to say it. I mean, with what he does and how extreme he goes, he can only perform these things in the presence of the beast. And what can he do? He can call down fire. He causes people to worship the image of the beast. He performs signs and miracles and all kinds of things along that line. I mean, it would have to be, like I said, to impress this generation, to impress this world. Like if you had a guy that was just, I touched this guy and he got up and he walked.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like an old school definition of a miracle, right?
Yeah.
But with, you know, camera tricks and stuff like that, you don't know if the guy was planted in the audience. You don't know if whatever,
yeah,
you know, deception occurred to make you think that this thing was real.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel like that's the way that this...
It feels like there's real miracles happening.
Right. And it feels like it's going to be hard for people to deny them.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for people to say, oh, no, that didn't happen. Not like he's going to touch somebody and they're going to get up and walk and be healed. But like he's going to stand in the presence of all the CNN cameras and all the MSNBC cameras and whatnot. And he's going to rain down lightning.
Yeah.
On an area.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, well, I don't know how they fake that.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to call down columns of fire and he's going to burn stuff up. It's going to be real time. It's going to be live television. Of course, you could probably say that they faked it, but with all these live accounts, all these live feeds from news sources that you trust, I'm giving air quotes here, only John can see it, trust for your news. You're more likely to believe it than if it was just a pre-recorded video that you saw on YouTube or something like that, where somebody could add in an effect or something.
Yeah. And you really can do some amazing things with film editing. You're a film editor, oh, yeah. You know?
Oh yeah. And so that's where I feel like not only does this beast have this supernaturalness to him, but he also, I think, has really close relationships with the media.
Mm.
Like, I think the media follows him around. I think, like, that's part of his nature is that, you know, not only is he pointing to the Antichrist always, like, that's where he's saying he gets his power from. That's where that all comes about. But he's really
charismatic and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the media is going to really want to pursue him.
Yeah. That makes sense.
In verse 12, because we talked about this in the previous podcast on how the beast from the sea could be literal, could be figurative. Is the headroom literal or is the headroom figurative? In verse 12, it really does make you think of a literal head wound because it's how he directs worship. He exercises the authority of the first beast in his presence and makes the earth and those who dwell in it worship the beast whose fatal wound was healed. It doesn't, you know, that fatal in there, that fatal wound really has a physical aspect to it.
Yeah, like he should have died.
Yeah, or he did die.
You know, there is that mockery of Christ in that
right.
element as well.
Yeah. So I think that that's an interesting thing worth bringing up and mentioning with that aspect of it, because that's really, you know, what we see him doing here over and over again. The other thing, and once again, having a lot of fun with this today, because it's kind of where the day is going.
Yeah.
I've been really interested in what's happening in our culture with fact-checking. It's become a big thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's really risen up here, especially through the COVID days,
yeah.
where you'll see somebody post something and, you know, instantly almost it's fact checked.
Yeah.
And you really can't get past the narrative that the fact checkers want you to read and understand. And that's where I feel like, that's why I say like this being, this false prophet must have a media connection, because he's not going to get fact checked.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be like, you know, him raining down lightning or him raining down fire. And then a little fact check's going to come up and say, fact check, this was actually just computer graphics.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's going to post it and they're going to say, no, he didn't do that. It's computer graphics. Watch, I can make the same thing happen with my, you know, laptop. You know, if they post that video, that's going to get fact checked. And that's going to say,
yeah,
no, the false prophet really did this. Of course, they're not going to call him false prophet. Probably, I don't know what his name will be, but
Chuck.
You know,
Charles
really did this. You know? Yeah. And so, I think that that's something interesting that's really just come up out of our recent culture of social media and, having these really, really strong media platforms that are controlled by private entities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not controlled by governments. They're not, really subject to our American freedom of speech. They're really governed by whatever laws and guidelines those platforms want you to have. So, yeah, fact checking could come into play with
right. And if he's got the people on his side that are controlling the narrative,
right,
then it just becomes fact.
Right.
And that's I mean, that's what we see today.
You know, he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which in it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast. So once again, that's a second time in three verses that he basically, it seems like he only has power in the presence of the beast.
Mm.
And in my notes here, I wrote Rogue from X-Men.
Oh.
Just because.
Yeah, because she has to.
She has to get her power.
From other, X-Men.
From other X-Men, uh-huh. Right? But can you see how the world's kind of, like, through media, been preparing us for this kind of stuff for years?
Mm.
I mean, when you talk about superhuman feats and different things like that, when we were in The Two Witnesses back in Revelation chapter 11, and if you got through that whole thing, you probably deserve a gold star because that was a long one.
Yeah.
But in that, they had power.
Yeah.
Amazing power that they got to demonstrate.
And in fact, this beast is given similar powers.
Very similar powers. And, you know, we know that the Antichrist is the one who overcomes the two witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see, like, there's this supernatural component, and I know that as believers, supernatural is not as, it's an easy thing for us to talk about than people who aren't believers. But I feel like in a world that's ready for, you know, reasons why superhuman things could happen, and we'd already talked about like alien seeding and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, if that becomes part of the narrative, if that becomes the religion that the world accepts as being their new religion that they want to follow, you could see where superhuman abilities could be added into the equation pretty quickly.
Do you know what's funny about this? I don't know if I would have ever even brought this up if it wasn't for the fact that we're seeing this so much on TV right now.
Yeah.
The alien narrative. And like, we're here literally for you to hear us say, warning, beware.
Right. Right. We're not saying that this is definitely going to happen this way.
Yeah.
But I think there is a cause for concern for believers that if this does become the narrative, if this does happen, how is it going to affect your faith?
Yeah.
Do you have an answer for it? Are you ready on that day that, you know, if the government's come out and say, hey, you know, we've made contact with alien life, is that going to rock your faith?
Right. Because there are governments that are saying this right now,
mm-hmm.
literally saying this right now.
So it's well worth mentioning. You know, one thing about this verse 14 that in all up until recently, I had one opinion of this particular phrase where it says, he tells those on that dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. Okay, so the wound of the sword really could relate back to that Zechariah verse that we read last week. But causing those who dwell on the earth to make an image, I'd always just thought, kind of like what you were just talking about, like one big statue,
yeah,
probably in New Babylon, you know, that was in the image of this Antichrist and it spoke something,
right,
you know?
Right.
And, whether it was through trickery or whatever the case was, that was how I always thought of it. That was how most commentators talk about it. And really that's completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it just really occurred to me that those who dwell on the earth, it really has this this feeling of everybody's involved with this. And maybe it's not one large statue, but maybe it's a lot of little ones.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's that they're in our homes. Like, he causes you to bring these into your homes, because that would be what he would want. He would want these devices brought into your home. He wants you to worship him. And if he wants you to worship him, he wants to know that he's being worshiped. And to me, it just really has this feel of these devices are all connected, you know, through some kind of like an internet sort of a system.
Mm.
And maybe they interact with the mark. Maybe they don't. I would assume they do. But, you know, maybe they know then that it's being worshiped.
Yeah.
So that you could worship from your home. Otherwise, these people all have to make some sort of, you know, for lack of a better word, pilgrimage to Mecca kind of a way of thinking to worship this thing, which is how most people teach this verse. But in our internet heavy, saturated, stay at home, stay safe world that we're living in, I could see where some kind of, for lack of a better example, Alexa type device, you were just waiting for me to say it.
I was like, where are you going with this?
could be in our homes, from that particular entity that, caused us to have that habit of worshiping it.
Yeah. And we really need to define what is worship. Like, there is the active pursuit of public worship, you know, that's very a visible thing, but really it could be something as subtle as just constant admiration, constant attention, mm-hmm. even something that's constantly got our attention and admiration could be the only form of worship we may need in this
right.
particular thing.
Well, you know, verse 15, it says, and it was given to him to give power or to give breath to the image of the beast so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many that do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So yes, it speaks. It has sentience in a way that it can understand you. It can respond to you. We're there with artificial intelligence. Like, that's where we're at, and it's growing all the time.
Uh-huh.
You knew we were going to have fun with this one today.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know. I encourage an open mind in this particular section because I don't feel like it's as simple as it was in the old Roman days where you did have a person hiding in a statue trying to move the mouth or something, you know, to make it seem like it was alive. I feel like there's a prophecy in this that could be speaking to a world that's capable of having artificial intelligence so that it knew when you were worshiping it. In whatever way it deems fit to be worshipped, whether that's bowing down and praising it or
giving it your undivided attention.
Right. Watching it on your smart TV or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, I know, but we promised a weird one with this. So I figured, hey, why not? Let's go there.
Yeah.
And then it's the third time in verse 15 that it's actually mentioned in this chapter. It talks about the one who has this head wound. So it's so prevalent. It's so much of a big deal of the character of the Antichrist, the head wound, that I really do encourage listeners to check out that section from Zechariah and see if they feel like that really works, if that fits in there for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, hey, why not talk about superheroes, artificial intelligence, and aliens?
Why not?
all when we're talking about the false prophet.
Well, I mean,
it fits, right?
You know, we're always kind of cautious to talk about this stuff on this podcast because we want this to be an encouragement to people and we don't want to theorize on some stuff. But we are bringing this stuff up because this is a lot of stuff that's floating around out there. Like, this is some stuff that people are pointing to and saying, you know, this is what I believe the Antichrist is going to do and be. And
right.
we want to bring them up. We want to talk about them.
We want to talk about it. This section, there's a lot that talks about the Antichrist. You know, we went through a lot of verses last week with
and there's
Zechariah.
More.
And, oh, yeah. And there's more. We did not, by any stretch of the imagination, go through all of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about the big ones, Zechariah, and we talked about Daniel. There is not a lot about the false prophet outside of the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
And the Revelation gives us a little bit, but I really feel like, one, it was left vague on purpose because I think that there's some prophecy in here that maybe it isn't fulfilled, like that we're still working towards it. But also, I just don't feel like God wanted us to know that in depth about it, not for us to wildly speculate about aliens, X-Men, and the other, but
AI.
But that we need to be very open and mindful, and not just buckle down and say, "Oh, it's got to be the Catholic Church because I heard it on, you know, a commentary once."
Yeah.
But really, just approach it with the mindset of going, "Okay, whatever it is, it's going to be very deceptive. It's going to sound pretty good. It's going to probably sound right, and the world's really going to get behind it."
Yeah.
And I have to know. I have to be firm in my faith. I have to be grounded in my faith with Jesus, so that I don't fall under into any kind of deluding spirit, whether that be that it's a very strong Catholic-based one world religion, or very strong Islamic-based one world religion, or something other. And we'll just file other as
everything we brought up else. Today.
Yeah. So I wanted to start the conversation on the mark.
Let's do it.
Because I know.
So first of all, there's stipulations wrapped around this one, though. Let's talk about the stipulations. We see that you have to have this thing in order to basically just like operate as a day-to-day dude, right. Person.
Buy, sell, trade.
Yeah, anything you want to do, you need to have this thing. Now, this is where this conversation right now, a lot of people are saying that the mark of the beast is a vaccination.
Yep, they say that.
And what's interesting about the vaccination thing is, like, it does actually fill a lot of criteria for the buying and selling and trading thing. I've never really seen anything come up in our civilization to where people are really pushing it in order for you to even go do anything. We've never really even seen this, and it's really based on inconvenience. You know, we kind of talked about that in the last podcast, that this might be such a subtle thing that it would be wrapped in inconvenience to begin with, and then become so mandatory that, like, you're going to be crippled without it. Mm-hmm. And so we see right off that the mark, you can't do anything without it.
Right.
And I do need to say to begin with, though, that a lot of people have speculated on the mark, what the mark is, but we have said this before, you need a beast. You need a false prophet. You need to know who these people are before you can distribute any kind of mark.
Exactly.
And that's one of the big reasons I can't buy into this vaccination thing, because, like, I don't see any of the other stuff that we need to see first.
Right. The other stuff's not there. And this is a big one.
There's a temple.
Well, yeah. Okay. So that's a big one.
That's a big one.
But we're not being required to worship an individual or a government with the taking of the vaccine.
Yeah.
So if you want to take the vaccine, to me, at least from what I'm seeing, nobody's worshiping any one individual or any government, which I think would be one of two criterias for that worship angle of taking the mark.
The only danger I see really in the vaccination on a spiritual level anyway, and I don't know if this is true, this is just me throwing something out there. At the most, it's conditioning us to just buy into whatever we're told.
Yeah.
So it really could be a conditioning, and I'm not even saying it is. Like, that's really the only thing I take away from it.
It's easy to start the process, and then, you know, several years down the road, people are used to it. Oh, you know, well, we had to get vaccinated for COVID-19, and then we had to get vaccinated for COVID-20, and and. You know, the mark is wrapped up into a future vaccine of something. It's very possible that a vaccine could fit the definition of the mark. That could work.
Sure.
But is this one it? No. Mm. I don't think this one is it. Now, there are some oddities with, like, the patent.
Yeah, we'll get there.
but I just don't see the worship angle happening right now. And I don't see it being really pushed by a false prophet, like one person for the whole world.
Yeah.
You know, obviously America has its doctors and scientists who are saying do it, and the rest of the world has theirs. But I don't see, like, one person rising up and really championing this cause worldwide.
I also want to say this. I don't think you can accidentally take the vaccine and go, oh my gosh, that was that the mark?
Right.
I don't think that's possible. And here's why I get there. Because this, again, we've talked about this a lot. This is a direct mockery of something that God has already set up.
Right.
So we already saw that God seals his saints. He seals his saints on their head. And it is this allegiance thing. It is this, I belong to God. And in this same scenario, you can't, in my opinion, take the mark without knowing you are signing on to an allegiance under the beast.
Right.
Like it, to me, it's a very obvious thing. Like this, you cannot take this without knowing that you are signing on with the Antichrist.
And I actually wanted to talk about God's mark because it does mention through scripture, and Satan's not original. He's just making fun of, mocking God, ripping things off from God. The very first mark wasn't actually placed on our bodies. It was placed above a doorframe.
Oh, yeah.
So Exodus 12:13 talks about how basically this was the people of Israel had to take a lamb and sacrifice the lamb to do the Passover.
Passover, yeah.
So that their firstborns wouldn't die when the angel of the Lord came through to kill the firstborns of Egypt. And so essentially the people had to be marked. And it says, the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live. And when I see blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So that was like really God's first mark.
Yeah.
You know, you maybe can make an argument for God marking his people with circumcision, and that was prior to this mark. But I really liked this, use of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to talk about circumcision. So we're just going to go with this one.
Gotcha.
But this next one, I've actually read on this podcast before, but it's just so relevant to today. I'm going to read this little bit here, and it's from Ezekiel chapter 9, verse 4. And what's happened is this angel is going to mark God's people.
Yeah.
Because essentially, they're getting ready to get hauled off to Babylon. And it says, the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, even through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and groan over the abominations which are being committed in their midst. But to the others, he said, in my hearing, go through the city after him and strike. Do not let your eyes have pity and do not spare. So, God was marking those people even back then. You know, Jerusalem's being surrounded. Ezekiel's essentially locked inside here. And he's trying, Ezekiel's really not achieving anything. He's giving us awesome scripture, but as far as getting the people to repent, none of that's happened. None of that's going on. And yet there still is a remnant. There still is some people that are for God. Mm-hmm. And so God goes through and marks all those who groan at iniquity, essentially. Ephesians 1:13 says that we are sealed with the promise of the Holy Spirit. Yeah. I like that. I think that's really cool. And then, of course, in Revelation 7:3, which we were in a couple weeks ago, we see that
the 144,000, yeah.
Yeah, the 144,000 are sealed.
What's really cool about that you're bringing that up right there, is that we also see that they're under the altar groaning at the injustice. So that kind of echoes the Ezekiel passage mm-hmm. that you just read.
Yeah, so this was God's before it was ever Satan's.
Yeah.
Satan just took it and said, no, I want people to go to hell because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really unfortunate, but that's, where it's coming from, is that God marked people for different reasons. And really going back to that Exodus view of putting that lamb's blood above the frame of your house. I mean, that's so cool visually to think of that for us, that we get passed over from judgment and damnation.
Mm-hmm.
But as we see with 144,000, they get the name of God on their foreheads. I mean, like, they're sealed up.
Yeah.
Evil can't touch them.
That should be like the new Ephesians 6. Instead of saying, I'm wearing the armor of God, we'll say, I'm sealed up.
I'm sealed up. Got this. So, the mark is originally God's, and Satan perverts it. Like,
yet again.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I actually took a lot of notes on the perversions that Satan does here. We already talked about the beast, the false prophet, and the dragon. There's the lamb. The wounded lamb, and he's wounded and survives that. There's the seals. You know, he has his own mark, but there's also this bride in white, you know, and later on we read about the prostitute in purple and scarlet. So again, everything Satan does is a mockery. It's a mockery of the things that God has made beautiful, mm-hmm. and the things that we desire from God, Satan very intentionally mocks.
Right. And I actually think that's what's really happening with this ever so quoted 666 verse, is that this comes from something that the Hebrew people did. And I'm going to say it bad.
However you say it, we're going to say it the same the rest of the podcast.
Gematria.
All right.
That's that it. What did you say before?
Gematria it is. Gematria.
But basically, it's an alphanumeric code of assigning a numerical value to a name, word, or phrase. Uh-huh. So, like in the Hebrew language, their first letter would be one all the way through the alphabet to where it ended.
Okay.
And so that's how, that's like the really simple, basic understanding of how it works. And with that thought process in mind, you know, in simple gematria.
Dang it. You're changing it already on me.
I don't, it's a weird thing.
Spell it. How's it spelled?
It's G-E-M-A-T-R-I-A.
Gematria.
Gematria. Sure. I'll butcher that some more as we go through.
It's not the last time you're going to change it on me.
Gematria. So in simple gematria, because there's different versions of it, Jesus's name is 888.
Okay.
I'm just bringing this up because I think like that's what Satan's trying to pervert.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. If you really kind of get into some of the numerology and stuff that they did a lot of, you know, the number 7 would be the number of completion. Mm-hmm. The number 8 would be the number of new beginnings, mm-hmm. and the number of 6 would be the number of man.
Yes.
And that is another false Trinitarian idea, because it is a trifold falling short of completion, number of man, 666. It is man, man, and man.
Right.
It is not 7. 7 is God's number of completion.
And this gematria, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
So the Hebrew people used it also in a really cool way. Basically, when they took a page of scripture and they wanted to copy it, because they knew the numerical value of all the letters, each page had a total. So every page had to total what the right amount was. So
interesting.
It had a component, it had a component in it to preserve information and to make sure that you were doing things correctly. Because it was, you know, oh, this page didn't total up the value that it should. You know, you have to do it over again because we want it to be perfect. And that was how they did it. So it was a concept that was really relevant to the Jewish people, but also the Greeks had this in their language too. So it wasn't just Hebrew. It was also Greek.
Yeah.
That can easily do this.
Well, it needs to be understood too, that the American language we have, the English language, the English language we have, thanks. We have numbers and letters. Now, Hebrew doesn't.
Right.
It's all one and the same. There's a numerical value to their letter system.
Well, you know, Jesus, it said of Jesus that, I come in the volume of the book it is written of me. Some people think like literally the sum total of everything equals Jesus from the whole word of God. And you find that in Hebrews 10, verse 7, and then Psalms 40, verse 7 also. And it's just a really interesting thought process that, you know, it all equals to Christ. And so Satan is trying to take and pervert that equation and pervert that number. And that might be the wisdom aspect of what John's trying to say here. You know, the wisdom that we're trying to discern is that Satan's trying to pervert what God's doing. And so whereas it was complete and it was, you know, 777 essentially, Satan's just trying to change the math. He's trying to insert his own way of doing things in here. Both the Hebrew and Greek languages are capable of gematria, but English kind of breaks down.
Yeah.
And it, you can make some stuff happen, but not quite.
We can add our number to letters. That's right. We've certainly done that. We're going to go there today with you.
Yeah. So are we there?
Let's do it.
Are we going there?
Let's do it. So we're going to have some fun right now. We're going to give some shout outs to beasts that historically people have called beasts. Now, I haven't read your list and you haven't read my list. Mm-hmm. And we've got some intersections, I'm sure.
My list is really weird because I pulled it off of a website. And
okay.
So there's a website you can go to that's a gematria calculator. And you can put names in and see what they add up to in Jewish gematria.
Oh, brother.
And so I played with this for far too long.
Okay.
But in addition to doing this, I was reading some commentaries on people, you know, whose names equaled something. And it's just all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to let you start.
Okay. So let's start here. I want to start with an obvious one. Nero Caesar literally calculates to 666, 666. And if you put this in Latin, which you can also do this system with if you get clever, then the translation that we actually see converted doesn't come out to 666 in Latin. It comes out to 616, 616. Mm-hmm. And in Latin, Nero Caesar at 116 actually comes out to that.
Right.
It comes out to 616. So Nero actually gets a special shout out because he was able to get it completed in the Latin system and in the Greek and Hebrew system for 666.
Yeah.
And we also know that Nero is definitely one of the beasts that we have historically called out in the context of the preterism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the historians would say that too. So we see that Nero is a great example of a beast or Antichrist. And as we go through these, we're not really going to make a big distinction between Antichrist and false prophet. We're just going to talk about some names and tell you why these got brought up.
Also, it is worth mentioning that while 666 is what most all modern Bibles use as their translation, there were older manuscripts that use 616 as its translation. 666 seems to be the most likely because of the poetry behind what we already talked about, the fall of man, you know, man.
Yep.
But just well worth mentioning that some of the other transcripts do have an alternative number in there. If you're reading an older Bible and you find that, specifically an older King James Bible might say that.
Yes. And here is another one. So we've extensively talked about Nero. Now I want to talk about another one that we've briefly brought up, and that is the papacy. And this is the historical opinion of the beast and Antichrist. So there is this word that I want to get this right, and I'm probably going to get it as bad as you got gematria. It's a...
I did that perfect.
Vicarius Filii Dei. So that word means representative of God's son. And this is one area that they will go to for the Pope, is that, you know, he basically ties himself so closely to God. And there's a lot of different historian commentary on why the papacy would be the Antichrist. Are you over there calculating?
Yeah.
Of course you are. Okay.
I wanted to find some new ones.
Okay. I'm going to drop a couple more then while you're working something out over there. So here's another one that I think a lot of people would know. Stalin would have been considered an Antichrist of the time. There's really not a lot of biblical evidence for Stalin, but he did a lot of killing, and that is where we would go with that. But I think more known is Hitler. Hitler himself was considered the beast in his day, and he was considered the beast because of his relentless persecution of specifically the Jewish people. You know, we know from the accounts of World War II of what Hitler was up to. Like, he was just mass killing people, specifically, you know, locking away Jews and not feeding them at all.
Right.
So Hitler is another commonly known Antichrist.
Caligula is one that you'll find. He was, Caligula means little boot, I think.
That, not little horn?
No, no. He wasn't a very large man, but when he was a young child, they used to make really little tiny clothes for him. And I believe that name means little boot. He has a different Roman name. Mm. But people started calling him Caligula. Well, he was known as the Mad King or Mad Emperor of Rome. And he really was quite mad, and he did a lot of weird stuff. But he, his name in Gematria, if you use some special characters in Hebrew, comes up to 616. So you'll find some people that say, oh, it's Caligula. Oh. Well, okay. But he didn't do the same. Like, none of these people truly fit what we've talked about so extensively with the character of the Antichrist. They might have aspects like Hitler persecuted the Jews, but Hitler never desecrated the temple.
Right.
You know, because there was no temple for him to desecrate. So, yeah, some of these people definitely have Antichrist characteristics, but they don't truly, truly do the whole job justice. Antiochus Epiphany, his name doesn't work for this. Also, he was way before this came out. He was not a threat to the Christian people because there was no Christian people at the time. This was during the Greek Empire. So this was before Rome took them over, before Christ even came. So he did desecrate the temple and he did persecute the Jews, but he really doesn't work for the whole entire piece of the puzzle. We've never had a person that's like 100% across the board. Nero probably being the closest.
Definitely.
Of all of them.
Yeah. So I got another one here, Muhammad. So he would have been considered the false prophet. So this is a common belief system here that Muhammad is the false prophet. Now, here's how a lot of people got here. Believe it or not, Sharia law through calligraphy. Did I say that right?
Calligraphy. Yeah, I know that one. I know calligraphy.
Through that process, it comes out to 666. And you can get there through Sharia law. Now, that is the law that the Islamic people operate under. And it's a very oppressive law. And in this law, we still see it today in some Islamic cultures where they will oppress their people to the point of really terrible things that they do to women. Specifically, they will make them, you know, not be able to bear children anymore in really gruesome ways for being disobedient. And Sharia law is one of the call outs for 666 taught through Muhammad. So here is another Antichrist that we have historically known to actually be the Antichrist is Nikola Carpathia from the Left Behind series. Mm-hmm. That one was for fun. That wasn't serious, but seriously.
In that book, he actually chose the number 216 as his number. I never truly understood that.
Maybe they just didn't want to put Satan's mark on their show.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
But part of why we're doing this, why we're doing a little bit of history, a little bit of modern, and what I'm going to do, which is kind of insane, is we want to show you how challenging this is to actually do. And how it really kind of is a futile effort to attempt to, you know, like, make numbers out of names and do anything like that. So here's some things that equal 666 using English as the base and then Jewish gematria as the decoding cipher. Okay.
Okay.
That's how this works.
All right.
When you're talking English, because we're in English, Raymond God equals 666.
What?
Yeah. The word prophecy converted from English into Jewish gematria 666.
Huh.
Babylon's God. The chosen number.
What?
666. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Birth date number. Lord of God's algorithm.
Hold on. What? If you translate birthday number,
yep.
It's 666.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not all of these were great. I should have prefaced that. Okay. So here we start some weird stuff. Number of a man, Barack Obama.
So if you put all that together, you get Obama.
Put all that together. Number of a man, Barack Obama.
Okay. I want to continue on with Obama for a second. So Obama was somebody that a lot of people were calling the Antichrist at the mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. When he was president, there was a lot of people saying, this guy, it's him. He's here.
Right.
And so let me actually go down a little road with
you. Okay, you go down the road.
This. So here's what happened with Obama. So he actually went to Jerusalem and stood in the holy place on the Temple Mount on a certain day. And this day mattered to people. So they called this day the day that Obama committed the desolation in the holy place. And here's how they got there. Because his name is Obama. He committed the abomination of desolation in the holy place. So that's how they got there. His name is Obama.
That is a stretch.
Yes.
Donald Trump, Mike Pence. You had to all of them together.
Donald Trump.
Drumpf. Mike Pence. You have to do it all together.
666.
666.
Okay.
So obviously that our current administration is right. I'm rolling my eyes for those of you who can't see.
Yeah. And I have that as a mention too. Some people are saying Trump.
Barack Obama as a president.
That's okay.
All that together. 666. The mind control of agenda of Chai. No clue what that even means.
Okay.
The serpent bearer. That one actually kind of works. Oh,
yeah. That okay. Works.
L. Barack Hussein Obama second.
L. And then the second?
They had to twist it to make it work.
Okay.
Mark of the Beast Barack Obama.
Where did you get this website? What is this? Is this an app? Tell me this is an app.
I think it might be an app.
Huh.
Prophet Muhammad 666. You kind of already mentioned that one.
Yep.
The gates of hell are open. 666.
That makes sense.
That one does work. My name is God. That one's kind of shocking.
That one's actually kind of scary too, because we know that the Antichrist will come and declare himself as God.
Otacon Kalar. I don't know who that is.
Doesn't sound good.
I couldn't figure that out. Name of Christ Lord. It's interesting.
Okay.
Payless. I'm not joking. It's like
the clothing company?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Are you making some of this
up? I'm not making any of these up. They're all real. They're all real. And I skipped a bunch of them.
Really?
Too. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So here's some other beasts that we've seen brought up recently. So here's one for you. Macron. He's the president of France.
Yeah, Emmanuel Macron.
Emmanuel Macron. Yeah. So he is one that has been brought up.
Consequently, I put his name in here. I couldn't get anything to come out.
Oh, yeah?
I tried that one.
Oh, there was a way somebody got his name to come out to that, but I don't remember
how. Oh, you got to twist it. You'd have to twist it hard.
Oh.
I tried.
So Macron. And what was the reason people have said that Macron would be the Antichrist?
Well, it's probably one of the loosest ones that I've heard. And yet there are some people that are so dogmatically insistent on that he is the Antichrist.
Currently, yeah.
He doesn't fit the geographical location, really, because he's more, he's from France. Yeah. As far as I could tell from his history, he's brought up and raised through France. That doesn't truly meet the definition. We didn't even get into where the geographic location of the Antichrist would probably most likely come out of in our last podcast. But there's strong evidence that would suggest he's a Syrian.
Syrian, yeah.
So he doesn't really fit that. He's not Jewish. He is Catholic, kind of. He grew up Catholic and he's renounced it since a little bit, but not really. But it's mostly, I think it's his name, Emmanuel, God with us. I think that's what people are getting it from.
Oh.
I haven't found really good.
No, I haven't either.
Stuff that points to him. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah. So here's one for you, and this one is really sketchy. The molecular weight of Viagra comes out to 666.
It's sad that I actually read that in my study.
Did you read that?
I did read that in the study of this whole thing, yeah.
Moving on, here's another one. Pop culture.
Just the phrase?
Just the phrase pop culture. People have said, this is the beast.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And the supercomputer in Brussels, in Belgium, is the beast.
The beast.
And yeah, you kind of talked about the AI idea.
Yeah.
And what are the quantum computing is one of the things that people are saying could have something to do with the system.
And this was a big one a couple of years ago, although it kind of ended up being, people figured out that it was definitely a twisting of things, that www, people said that like when the web came out that www was 666.
Oh,
it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, you could twist it to kind of make it be that, but it really, it doesn't work out super well. One more worth mentioning. It's more of an honorable mention. So barcodes, they start with a six. There's a six in the middle, and then there's a six at the end. It's part of how their structure of those little lines go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people were afraid of barcodes.
And that was even the mark on
that show from the 70s.
Yeah.
What was that called? Like Thief in the Night?
Oh.
Thief in the Night?
Maybe. What was the one? How did they do the mark on Left Behind? I thought it was a barcode.
Maybe it was a barcode.
Yeah. Here's another one for you. Coronavirus.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually used calligraphy for this, from English, of course.
Calligraphy? Or
what was
calligraphy
the name?
Calligraphy is cursive writing.
No, no, no. What was the name? What did we call it again?
Gematria?
Gematria. Thank you. Gosh. Coronavirus. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of ways to do this one. The patent 606060.
Something like that, yeah.
With some other numbers involved, mm-hmm. too, but they have claimed that that's the mark of the beast there, too. But with the name Corona, you can actually use, in the English language, comes out to six. So you've got six letters, and mm-hmm. then you come out to 66 with the...
Oh, I'm going to run through the calculator.
Yeah, you come out to 66 with the letters themselves. So you got six letters that come out to 66. So you got 666. Corona, I watched somebody do this online.
Coronavirus. Here we go.
No, it's supposed to be Corona.
Oh, just Corona.
Just Corona.
Oh, yeah. Coronavirus is way too much, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if it works.
But this is straight from English. We didn't use, this isn't using the your Jewish thing there.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Corona in simple gematria comes out to 66.
Yeah, and that's what I said, 66, and then you've got six letters in Corona.
Yeah.
So 666.
So it's there. We're really twisting it to get it there. And I wanted to bring this one up because I thought of this one. I thought this was funny. Mankind is 66. So just like Corona, 66. I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
I'll bring it up.
So here's my favorite, and this guy's is really popular right now. Jared Kushner.
Uh-huh.
I am sorry if you're out there and you feel offended that that I'm laughing at this, but this is the popular Antichrist today.
Besides Emmanuel Macron, he's like the second guy that's on people's radars.
Yeah. So here's the reasons they got here. Kushner helped build the Abraham Accord.
Right.
And one of the things that we're looking for with the Antichrist is him to bring in a peace treaty. Well, right. Him to help sign a peace treaty. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the tells of the Antichrist. There will be a peace treaty signed. It's brought up in Daniel. And we're also looking for the abomination of desolation. So those are the things that we're looking for. But there's this peace treaty that Kushner brings in with the Abraham Accord. And again, we've said this in previous podcasts that we're not going to get too wound up about this Abraham Accord until we see some countries like Iran or Syria getting involved. But here's the best part about Jared Kushner. His address is 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
Oh, that's not the best part. I purposely saved one of my names from the gematria calculator that I was doing because I knew you were going to do this.
Did you? Okay. Yeah.
So Messiah Kushner.
Oh,
is 666 from English to gematria Jewish calculator. Messiah Kushner. So there's your irrefutable proof that it's obviously Kushner.
Uh huh.
So one thing that I wanted to bring out with this, and I hope that it didn't sound like we were making too much fun of this, but it really is a futile effort to go through and be like, oh no, I figured out the mark of the beast because I took this letter out of this guy's name and added in this title or whatever into my gematria calculator online to figure out who it was or whatever. John in Revelation in chapter 9, verse 11, he says in Hebrew, his name is Abaddon. In Greek, his name is Apollyon. John actually tells us when the beast is, when that evil fallen angel is coming up out of the abyss, he tells us two translations of his name, mm-hmm. one in Hebrew, one in Greek. Later on in Revelation 16:16, it says, and they gather them together to a place which in Hebrew is called Harmageddon. So once again, when it's really relevant for us to know if it's Jewish or if it's Hebrew, John tells us.
Yeah.
And it was so relevant on the name of the beast that comes up out of the abyss that John tells us both. And nothing like that is mentioned here to help us with decalculating this number. It doesn't say, you know, in Hebrew, his name equals 666. It doesn't say in Greek, his name equals 666. It doesn't say in an English, which has, in a language which hasn't been invented yet, his name is 666. It doesn't say anything like that. We don't have any of that really base guideline information that we need to decode that 666.
Yeah. Well, and I think when the Antichrist is obvious, this will be something that we use to add some validity to it.
Yeah. I think it will be very relevant for when the tribulation is actually going on.
Yeah. We'll know then, but it's not worth reaching and grabbing in the dark and trying to
know,
add some letters to
when we
Macron's
see,
name. And
right. When we see, you know, that one world government emerge and divide into 10, you know, kingdoms, essentially. And then we see specifically one of those leaders really spearhead a peace effort with Israel. I feel like we could play with his name at that point and figure it out. And we'd be like, that's the wisdom John was talking about. Oh, okay. We got it now.
I agree. It'll be more obvious. So this was our study in Revelation 13. We don't want to come across like we're making fun of anybody. Royce and I, we just like to laugh and have a good time. And we hope that you do too. We hope when you listen to these episodes that you're learning and you're laughing with us and that you're gleaming some ideas that we have already done the legwork on. And hopefully you're gaining from this and growing closer to the Lord, because that's ultimately our goal, is for you to grow closer to the Lord and grow closer in your understanding to what his intention for this book is. We bring up these things because these are a lot of things that have been made public, and a lot of people are throwing these names out there saying, I've got it all figured out. I've got it all figured out. But at the end, when all this stuff becomes relevant, assuming that it wasn't Nero.
Right.
When all of this is more obvious, then we're going to know. We're going to be very aware of what's happening. And this is going to add validity to that. It's not going to be the thing that we got to go calculating, you know, secret names with online calculators that we found. But again, we want you to grow closer to the Lord in this. We want you to laugh with us. We want you to enjoy God's word with us. And we want you to read these scriptures along with us and really just to have a good time doing it. Grow closer to God. Grow closer to his word. We love you and we thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Center Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review for daily and weekly content. Once again, if you would like more information about Faith Center, you can visit lg4square.com, lg4square.com, and you can email the show at podcast@lg4square.com. Thank you for listening, and God bless.